everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. It's July 14th. Tom, storming of the Bastille. Does that ring a memory of what today is?
It's storming of the Bastille Day?
It's Bastille Day. A big holiday over in France.
Francais?
There you go. It's Thursday. It's the 14th of July, 2022. We are now 11 and a half years into our radio show. 34th year on television and radio in Tucson. Our show coming from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. Our live line, all of our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Well, the first scientific images captured by the James Webb Space Telescope this week are spectacular. And that, my friends, is putting it mildly. 21 University of Arizona researchers played a role in developing and managing the instruments on board the $10 billion infrared observatory. University of Arizona Board of Regents Professor Dr. Marcia Rieke led the development team and now serves as principal investigator for the telescope's main camera, with light sensors designed, built, and tested at the University of Arizona. Her husband, fellow Regents Professor Dr. George Rieke, is science team lead for the camera and spectrograph, which he helped design. Joining us now on the live line, Dr. Marcia Rieke. Dr. Rieke, what a week.
Oh, it has been an absolutely fantastic week. I can hardly imagine being above cloud nine the way I am now.
Yeah, that was my first thought. You must be still on cloud nine. And, you know, after 2.5 years of the pandemic, war in Europe, the inflation report, I think the world, Dr. Rieke, was ready for these five images. So spectacular. Were you surprised when you saw the first images?
I was. I expected, from a kind of intellectual computational sense, that the image quality was great because that's what we'd seen during our testing. But to actually see multicolor images where the media masters at Space Telescope Science Institute took these data and turned them into just such fantastically beautiful images was very gratifying.
How about this crop of images? How was it decided upon how many there would be? And did they try to do a particular sequence for variety's sake, or how did that work?
The Space Telescope Science Institute set up a committee to decide what the images would be, and it was a very small committee. Just, in fact, I didn't know what they had selected, but their principles were they wanted to have imagery that would be both aesthetically pleasing, beautiful, but also have a scientific rationale, be valuable to the community from a science standpoint. And they wanted to highlight all of the telescope capabilities. So there's different images and different spectra and plots that highlight each of the different instruments.
Which one appealed to you? Which one jumped off the page at you?
From the visual standpoint, the Carina Nebula just, was blown away.
It's super, super. That's my favorite as well. It's probably on the front page of every newspaper in the world. It is, all of them really are aesthetically appealing, but there is scientific utility behind each of them, correct?
That's right. So, for example, Carina is showing us in detail that we could not have imagined exactly what's happening in a region that's forming new stars.
And the first one that the president, that was released, that the president then shared with the public, that shows, and I've seen these kind of comparisons of previous scientific images compared to this one, and it's just so sharp. Is that what kind of jumps out at you?
That's partly what jumps out at me. The other thing that jumps out at me is that each of the filters or colors, if you like, that went into making that image, the exposures were only 2 hours. Hmm. The corresponding Hubble exposures were a couple of days.
Wow.
So, yeah, so the best is yet to come.
How does this telescope compare to Hubble?
It's much bigger, so it collects 7 times as much light. And perhaps most importantly, it works at much longer wavelengths. Its shortest wavelength overlaps with Hubble's longest, but it's what we call an infrared telescope. So we're seeing the universe in a very different way.
Can you explain for our listeners what are we talking about when we say infrared?
So the word infrared means beyond red. And my instrument, NIRCAM, actually goes out to a wavelength 10 times visible light. And then there's yet another instrument that goes another 5 times longer than that. And the importance of these long wavelengths lies in several ways. One, if you want to study planets around other stars, these are the optimum wavelengths. If you want to study the most distant galaxies that get redshifted by the expansion of the universe, these are the optimum wavelengths. And if you want to see through the dust and see the details in some of the regions in our own Milky Way, again, these are the optimum wavelengths.
What are we looking at? Is this then the deepest image ever taken with the Webb telescope? Kind of give us a little perspective of what we are looking at and how far away is it?
So this deep image of a galaxy cluster kind of has two parts. The brighter galaxies that look kind of whitish in the foreground are about 4 billion light years away. That galaxy cluster is so massive it can bend light, and you see some arcs kind of in the image that are galaxies lying way further away than this 4 billion light year galaxy cluster. And the gravitational field of the cluster bends their light into these funny shapes. But there are other places in this image where we're seeing objects as they were only about 4 billion years after the Big Bang. So already it's competing with the greatest depth that days and days and days and days with the Hubble revealed.
When was this idea for the Webb telescope? When did you first hear about it, Marcia Rieke?
I didn't hear about it until around 1995. I think people had been discussing it earlier than that. And then I actually became part of an advisory group for it in 1998.
And Hubble, what about the Hubble project? When, just trying to get a little chronology, when was that first talked about?
The very first mention of something like Hubble was the late 1960s. And, of course, it was supposed to be launched something like 1988, but there was the Challenger disaster, and so its launch got delayed until 1990.
And this was a project, talking about the Webb. This one, there were a lot of questions that even as the launch went off, you had some kind of nervous days, didn't you?
Absolutely, because Webb has a lot of what NASA likes to call single point failures, something that if it doesn't happen, then the mission doesn't work. And Webb had 344 of these. And so until everything was deployed, we were all kind of on pins and needles.
You know, Tom, our wonderful engineer, just pulled up that image again. The one we like, Carina? Carina?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's Carina.
I've got it in front of me, and it's just, give us some idea how many stars and galaxies might be contained just in this particular image.
Oh, I'd have to think about that, but this is an image where there might be a few background galaxies, but taken at a region of the Milky Way where we don't see through our own galaxy very well, that part that looks very brown along the bottom. The reason it looks that brownish color is that it's full of interstellar dust, the material from which new stars and planetary systems form. And we'll have to do a census in there because there are, of course, a lot of stars in there, but there are also, maybe perhaps more interestingly, a lot of protostars. And there could be well in excess of 1,000 stars in this picture.
New York Times put out a piece today, Dr. Rieke, saying, answering that what we have seen with these images has answered a couple of questions. And at the foremost is, it works, and it works really well. Is it everything you would want, or is there some areas that you would have even been happy if it could have produced more? I don't know. Is this fulfilling your expectation of where we are as we get going with this?
It has just completely blown away my expectations. The telescope alignment is more than a factor of two better than we had predicted or hoped.
Wow.
So it's just unbelievably great.
And the testing for this went on for how long?
Well, the testing after launch went on for 6 months, but there were several years worth of testing before launch.
And the University of Arizona is a huge player in this. I mentioned in the introduction 21. So you've got 20 other teammates. What was the scope of their involvement? Was it mainly in the camera work or what?
There was a variety of things. My team, of course, was responsible for designing and helping Lockheed Martin with the construction. And then many of the team have participated in various different test campaigns. And all at the same time, they're also working on designing their own observing programs because we have 900 hours of observing time. So people have done a variety of things. And it's, you know, testing a camera is a lot like observing with the camera. So astronomers are pretty good at being able to flip between doing the science and doing the testing.
All right, Dr. Rieke, stay with us. I've got about 10 more minutes with you. We'll take a break right here. Be back with Dr. Marcia Rieke at the University of Arizona.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We continue with our discussion with UA Regents Professor Dr. Marcia Rieke, who led the development team and now serves as the principal investigator for the telescope on the James Webb Space Telescope. She was very much involved with the main camera, with light sensors designed, built, and tested at the University of Arizona. I want to go back, Dr. Rieke, to talk a little bit about how far back in time will the James Webb Telescope go? How far back toward, I guess, the ultimate, the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years ago?
I hope that, Mother Nature willing, of course, that we get within at least 50 million years of the Big Bang. And the question here is, how do the first blobs of gas and dust coalesce into stars and galaxies that we can detect? And just this, measuring this point in time is already a fantastic result.
What are you most excited about to be investigating, and how long will that investigation last?
My very favorite project is the one we were just mentioning, trying to get as close back to the Big Bang as we can. And my team has their first big chunk of observing time in September, and it will take us a couple of months to digest and analyze that. But I have to say I'm also very intrigued by another suite of projects that are aimed at measuring the atmospheres of planets around other stars. And if we can find one where that planet's atmosphere matches Earth's, I think that'd be a pretty fantastic discovery.
So an atmosphere with Earth-like, an Earth-like atmosphere, are there particular then signatures that you and your teammates would be looking for to find these Earth-like atmospheres?
Yes, I mean, we can tell the size of a planet and so on by this so-called transit observing type. But what we would do is we would observe one of these transits, look at the spectrum of the starlight going through this planet's atmosphere, and we would look for the signatures of things like water, carbon dioxide, methane, and so on. But most importantly, we'd like to be able to prove that there's oxygen. And oxygen is a very uncooperative molecule, but it is possible to observe ozone, which is, of course, related to oxygen. It's a molecule that has three oxygens instead of two. And so if we find that kind of signature, then we're going to be pretty certain we must be getting close to an Earth-like atmosphere.
Explain for our listeners, I understand each of Webb's four instruments have specific capabilities. Could you cover that for us?
Sure. Of course, NIRCam takes pictures. We have a little bit of the ability to split light up into its constituent colors, but taking what we call spectra is really the prime rationale for the NIRSpec instrument. It has several different ways of splitting light into its constituent colors or rainbows, if you will, and it has a first-time-in-space capability where it can take spectra of 200 galaxies at once by opening little windows that let the light into the instrument. The mid-infrared instrument called MIRI is both a camera and a spectrograph, and its sort of claim to fame is that it works at wavelengths much longer than the near-infrared ones. And then the fourth instrument provided by the Canadian Space Agency has two jobs. Part of it is what we call the fine guidance sensor that helps stabilize the pointing of the telescope so we can get these sharp images. And then it has another part that's called the near-infrared slitless spectrometer. And it has a special feature designed expressly for measuring the spectra of exoplanets.
You know, where is the telescope station? I mean, is it where in space after the launch? Where did it go? Where is it taking these incredible images?
So it's at a point called the second Lagrange point, which is about 1 million miles from Earth. And what's magic about this place is that it's a sort of stable place where the gravitational fields of the sun, earth, and moon kind of cancel each other, and something can stay there. And so Webb is actually orbiting the sun at the same rate as the earth, and so we're kind of going together in a little gravitational lockstep.
How did you find that sweet spot? I'm sure there was a lot of research that went into finding. I could tell by just your voice that you really like where the telescope is stationed.
Indeed. And this particular kind of gravitational effect has been known for a long time. In fact, the name Lagrange is named after a French mathematician who calculated this way back in the late 1700s using Newton's theory of gravity. And Webb is not the first mission to go to this place in space. There have been a couple of earlier ones, but it's a very convenient place to put a space telescope.
What's the life of the Webb telescope, Dr. Rieke?
Well, originally we hoped we might get 10 years. But the European Space Agency did such a good job of launching us precisely. We have enough fuel left that it looks like we might have a 20-year lifetime.
And what about Hubble? What's its future?
I suspect that Hubble will keep working as long as its components continue to function. It has capabilities at very short wavelengths that Webb does not have.
This is certainly, would you consider, you probably are, this is the crowning achievement for your career, isn't it?
It is, and if I told you how old I was, you'd know that I might have otherwise retired.
Well, I'm glad but, you haven't. Yeah.
Right. No, I wanted to see this through to the end, and I'm going to get my money's worth out of my 900 hours of time, and then I might think about going on cruises.
Well, you and your husband are quite a team. The Riekes, very famous. Where did you meet your husband?
Here at the University of Arizona. He actually hired me.
What?
Yeah, he's just a little bit older than I am, and he was an assistant professor, and he hired me as a postdoc.
Hmm. So, what's next? I guess you were mentioning you've got some observing time coming up in September, correct?
Yes. In fact, my team has got various observations scheduled throughout the whole next year and a half. And so we are going to be working hard on the data that we get and writing papers and telling the world about what we've discovered.
You know, I was just reflecting, you said that it was in the mid-90s that you first heard about Webb, and look how long these things take. And I'm wondering if there's something out there that you're just now hearing about what will be, you know, next after Webb.
Well, there's another mission that's under construction right now that will do an infrared sky survey. It won't go as deep as Webb, but it will cover the entire sky, which is a real plus. And then there may be some missions in the 20s that would launch something like the late 2030s or 2040s that would be expressly designed to look for life on other on planets around other stars.
When can we expect now the next batch of images?
Well, that depends on how quickly we crank things out, but I would be surprised if we don't hear some more interesting news within the month.
Oh, I'll look forward to that, along with millions of other people. It was just a real positive shot in the arm to see those incredible images when there's been so much bad news, Dr. Rieke. Hey, it was great catching up with you and sharing all this wonderful news this week. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Marcia Rieke at the University of Arizona. So happy for her. My goodness, all the years her and her teammate husband have put into this project. And boy, they, as she said, they're still on cloud nine. We'll take a pause right here. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo will be with me in studio, Tucson Unified Superintendent.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, Kate Kensky will be here. Dr. Kensky is one of the most well-known, well, nationally and internationally, talking about political communication. She's a professor in the UA Department of Communication. The Buckmaster Show, one of our great sponsors, Green Things, the 15-acre site, 3384 East River Road. Everything you need for the garden. Garden got a little bit of a shower over at our place the night before last. The plant said, thank you, but I need more. This is a great time to plant. So then when we get some rain or more rain, you're going to have some great color in the garden. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Zocalo Village, some of that great Talavera pottery over there at Zocalo Village. Let's welcome now to the program Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, Superintendent, Tucson Unified. Dr. Trujillo, how are you?
Doing very well, Bill. It's great to be back. I hope you had a wonderful 4th of July. And I just hope that even in this heavily politicized and polarized day and age, we can all still agree that our nation is still the greatest experiment in freedom, democracy, and individual liberties in the world, and that we could at least take a day to celebrate that still.
Yeah, we can celebrate also some of these beautiful images we're just talking about from the Webb Telescope. Boy, Dr. Trujillo, after 2.5 years of bad news, wasn't it nice to pick up the newspaper and see some of those images? Gee.
That was amazing. I'm still pulling those images up on my phone. Mm-hmm. And just the imagination, the wonder, the inspiration at seeing those images and being acutely aware of just how infinitely large the galaxy is and the universe is. And it puts it into perspective, our little place here on Earth.
Well, it's summer. School will be starting very soon in a couple of weeks at Tucson Unified. It's not really downtime for administrators like Gabriel Trujillo. He's busier than ever. In fact, that was a very important meeting last night. There's a better payday coming for over 7,000 employees in your district.
Yeah, absolutely. And specifically, last night, we moved the district's internal minimum wage to $15 an hour. We still had a portion of those over 7,000 employees making as low as $13.50 an hour. Mm. We wanted to be able to provide some immediate assistance for those employees during
when will they see that boost?
Difficult time. This is retroactive to July 1. So our board, I want to thank our governing board for taking this immediate action. It was governing board clerk Luna Rose, who upon learning of our budget situation being in a better spot as a result of the legislature's K-12 budget, made it a priority to make the motion.
Hey, I want to ask you about what came out of the legislature concerning what they're calling empowerment accounts. Some might say, and defenders of public education, I like to believe I'm one of those, Dr. Trujillo, that this is like an opt-out for people who don't think public education's doing the right thing.
Well, it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit worse than that. I've spent the better part of my career fighting against the expansion of empowerment scholarship accounts. And empowerment scholarship accounts have been around now for almost a decade, but they've been very limited to availability to families with who have students with disabilities. But now, as a result of legislative action, they have been expanded to be inclusive of any parent in Arizona's K-12 system that for whatever reason is not satisfied with their local school. They can receive the funding that the school district would receive, okay, for that student's attendance of the school. They can receive it directly, and they can keep it, and they can homeschool their kid.
Whoa.
Or they can take it and use it as tuition assistance for a private school or some of these elite charter schools. Now, interesting is private schools already charge tuition, so this is like double the income, right? So you now you're getting the state funding that's going to come in with the parent, as well as all of the tuition that you're collecting on the rest of the students. It is a tremendous blow to public education. It is a tremendous blow to the notion that the haves and the have-nots, that there's a spirit to make sure that each and every single child receives an amazing educational experience. You can't do that when you're deliberately siphoning off funding from the public structure and routing it over to the private one.
Is this the biggest blow to public education in your lifelong career in education?
I would consider this one to be the biggest blow to public education that I have seen in my career. The financial impact that empowerment scholarship accounts, this expansion could have on TUSD, is something that we're not really going to know until probably spring semester, because the expansion doesn't go into effect till 30 days after the legislature has adjourned. And I'm an open enrollment guy. I've always been a fan of open enrollment. In fact, TUSD is one of the largest open enrollment districts in the state. Mm-hmm. We have something like 15,000 students attend a school outside of their locally assigned neighborhood school. We have thousands of students that come in from schools outside the district. So for me, it's not shying away from the competition or from the pressure to be better and to do better. But when you deliberately rob us of the funding necessary to do that, only to route it to an alternative system that doesn't have to play by the same rules. These elite private schools, they don't have to take the Arizona merit. They don't have to get measured for effectiveness against the A through F letter grade system. They don't have to go through audits from the Auditor General's Office for Financial Transparency. They don't have to have boards. They don't have to abide by open meeting law. And so when you have this alternative structure that does not have to play by the same rules of accountability and transparency that the public structure does, that's what I have a problem with.
Why should they get special treatment?
That's a great question. If this is truly in the spirit of a free market approach to public education, the notion being that the more competition that we can, the more options that we can surround our parents with, educationally, will challenge the local school to be better and to do better. I don't have any issues with that. It's when those alternative options get to play by special rules and get our funding to be able to do so. That's where I see the injustice and I see the inequality. And quite frankly, I see the intentional attempt to bust out and break down the traditional public school district as we know it.
Matt has called us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Matt, you're with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent at Tucson Unified. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Dr. Trujillo, always a pleasure to speak to you. Obviously, we have to thank the fact that the Republican Party was so dysfunctional that Rusty had to basically turn to the Democrats and get his help to pass the budget. And that led to a great opportunity for them to save the save you guys on education. I spoke to the Grand Canyon Institute about the EAS, the Empowerment Scholarships, and while they are watching it, they sort of indicated a couple of things about this all, that really it's a tipping point. It probably won't have as much of a drastic effect immediately, but and you know, might actually play against possibly against the charters too, as some of them switch. So it'll be interesting to see how this whole ES thing plays out. But I agree, it's another attack on public education. You guys are looking at culturally relevant textbooks or something to that effect, or approved textbooks. Could you elaborate on that for the public? Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, no. So that's a great question, Matt, and I'm in total agreement with Matt. To answer his first point, I agree with him. I don't think that the effects, the economic effects or the financial effects of the Empowerment Scholarship account expansion is going to be felt immediately. I think it's something we're going to start seeing a year from now, 2 years from now, what that impact is going to be. And then the big question on the table is, do these elite charter schools and private schools actually want the general education John Q. TUSD student that doesn't have the through-the-roof ACT scores, that's not gifted and talented, that might be language limited, that might have disabilities? That remains to be seen. To the second point, the Tucson Unified School District, per the court order that we're operating under, the Unitary Status Plan, we've been mandated to offer what are known as culturally relevant courses in English language arts and in math and in social studies. And these courses, they're elective courses. So they're not mainstream curriculum. Parents have to choose to be there. Kids have to choose to be there. And what they do is they teach the content through the lens of minority populations here in the U.S. So, for example, social studies would teach a unit on the Great Depression, but through the eyes of the immigrant farm workers and the immigrant farm worker experience, or the Chinese American experience, or the Native American experience. So it takes mainstream American history, and all it does is it applies a multicultural lens. What it does not do, and I want to be very, very clear, is incorporate in any way, shape, or form any tenet or any component of critical race theory. So I just want to make sure that we're clear about that.
All right. And before we take a break, listener Noah said districts like Tucson Unified are upset when competition is available, they fail. When there is no competition, they still fail, but students are stuck.
So I will kind of reiterate, you know, just before we spoke with, sure. with Matt, we love competition. We don't fear competition. And in fact, even before the Empowerment Scholarship account, caller Noah, we went head to head with 96 charters that are already open inside of TUSD's 220 square mile border. And in 50% of the time, we out enroll them. We defeat them. There's not a charter school on the south side or the west side that outdraws a TUSD school. Now, the east side, it's another story. So it depends on which corner of the district that, you know, we're talking about in terms of whether or not we're successful in the face of new charters coming open. But charter schools in and of themselves do challenge us to be better, more innovative, and be creative. I've never been against that. What I am against is creating an alternative set of rules that rigs the system, that creates a disadvantage for us.
All right, we'll pause right here. Buckmaster Show on a Thursday afternoon. Back with Dr. Trujillo after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I think we're going to be about 105, Tom, to about 107 here in the Tucson area. 106. Okay, that's a compromise. Anyway, Silver City, what do you think? 87 degrees. So that is wet. I mean, that's almost a 20 degree difference from the Tucson area. We always like to talk about the Buckmaster Show. Summer guarantee in Silver City, at least 10 degrees cooler. And this one's, boy, that's shooting it through up to 20, perhaps, degrees. It's only about a three-hour drive over there. And the good news for them, they've had a half a foot of rain for this rainy season, 5 to 6 inches so far. So great time to visit the Gila National Wilderness. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org for more information. Let's continue with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. Robert would like to speak next on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, Robert. You're with Dr. Trujillo. Tom, do we have Tom, I introduced Robert. Do we have Robert? Yeah, okay. Robert, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, you're with Dr. Trujillo.
Hey, Dr. Trujillo, in talking about a level playing field, have you ever considered eliminating sports and all sports activities to try to ease the burden? Because private schools and the charter schools don't have that ball and anchor on them.
Hmm. Okay, Robert. Let's see what Dr. Trujillo says about athletics.
You know, that's a really, really good point, and that's an aspect financially that allows charters and smaller private schools to be more nimble financially, be a little bit more innovative in what they're able to do in offering child care. And
so they don't have to worry about sports programs.
They don't have to worry about sports programs. A lot of them don't.
Yeah.
For TUSD, though, I don't think we would ever be at that place, you know, because sports and fine and performance arts and, quite frankly, career and technical education is in our blood. Generations of families have played sports in TUSD and bring their kids to play sports in TUSD.
A lot of tradition. Tucson High and other schools.
And I think that that's the very tool. That's probably the biggest hammer that we carry when we're talking about competing for open enrollment kids are those special programs. And then, of course, what we know about the fine arts is the connection to academic performance you get when students are able to read and play music.
All right, let's go back to the live line. Sean is with us. Hey, Sean.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
sure.
it. Doctor, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
It's been about 4 years since I've actually looked into this, and I'm actually getting back into it a little bit now. Has TUSD actually improved? Last time I talked to one of your board members, they were at about a 32% reading level, reading comprehension level in third grade. Have they improved or decreased or stayed the same over the last 4 years?
Well, I can tell you what. It's a tale of two questions, right? So have we improved over the last 4 years? The answer is no, because of COVID. So we have not reached pre-COVID proficiency levels. We had momentum going before COVID, especially in reading and math. So no, the answer is over the last 4 years, we have not. However, when you look at our scores on the new Arizona assessment, the Arizona Academic Skills Assessment that just came out about 3 weeks ago, our students did remarkably better than they did in both COVID years. We saw 8 to 10% gains in reading, writing, and math in 5 out of the 6 tested grade levels. So those gains, of course, don't bring us back to where the students were proficiency-wise before COVID, but they show us the importance of in-person learning, and they show us how difficult online learning was for thousands of kids.
Okay, Sean, thank you very much. All right. The budget package was approved last night, and this is a little bit higher than last year, right? $353 million.
That's right. So thanks to a K-12 legislative bill that increased our per pupil funding by $385, and now with additional monies coming in for special education and for free and reduced lunch kids, we passed a budget that was $21 million larger than we were able to pass last year. So good news for TUSD. In the short term, will that be negated by parents taking these empowerment scholarship account dollars? Don't know yet.
So what's the school year? What's the plan here? It's the middle of July, and it always gives me pause to think, oh my gosh, middle of July, it can't be school around the corner, but it is.
School is around the corner. Yeah, school is around the corner. So, yeah.
So what's the outlook?
Well, we're looking
for the fiscal, not only the money picture for the budget, but what about the facilities for your schools? They looking pretty good?
Facilities are looking pretty good. We are struggling right now with a lot of summer work order projects, a lot of them having to do with interior renovations, exterior renovations.
Back ordered, right? The supply chain?
Because of supply chain issues.
Yeah.
Dealing with vendors. We have been trying to look at the purchase of more keyless entry systems for safety. And the wait time on those are several months out because there's a national run on those card swiping, keyless entry systems for offices and buildings. So other than that, I think we're doing very, very well. I think the action that our governing board took to immediately increase wages for mission critical positions so that we're more competitive with the private sector. We've seen a better response now to groundskeepers applying for positions, custodians, and still struggling to get HVAC specialists to come in and work on our air conditioned systems.
So is it safe to say this is the first opening of a school year since it would be the fall of 2019 that would be close to pre-pandemic?
This is as close to pre-pandemic as we're going to get. This has the feel of the 18-19 school year.
18-19.
Yeah, it has the feel of that, or that 19-20 school year where we open normally.
Yeah.
And we're excited. You know, I had a glimpse of a briefing on enrollment yesterday. We're where we need to be. We're right now, the district is up about 500 students, which is always a positive thing around 30 days out.
Mm-hmm. But the teachers will be happy this time going in. The morale will be good because the money picture looks pretty good.
Money always helps.
Yeah.
You know, we increased teacher salaries, their base salaries inside of 301 by $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers got retention stipends, so they're going to see an additional $2,500 with each passing semester. Mm-hmm. They're eligible for an additional $1,500 for pay for performance. So I think our teachers are feeling pretty good. Our governing board invested $2 million into benefits to make sure that our benefits, that the cost of benefits are kept at bay so that our employees don't see these huge increases. So I think we've done everything that we can to support our employees, particularly our teachers, during these very difficult economic times.
Good luck, Dr. Trujillo. We'll talk with you in late August after the new school year is up and running. Hope it goes well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Always a pleasure.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Trujillo and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, that will do it. Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show tomorrow, talking about political communication on our Friday Focus interview. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. Dave Ramsey and his very popular show on money is next.